Ever wanted to try an Olympic and Paralympic sport? Try fencing. It's fast, safe, and easy to start. Find a beginner class near you at usafencing.org/try-fencing. That's usafencing.org/try-fencing.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Simon Roche, thank you for joining me in the trenches, as always.
It's my pleasure, Jeremy. It's really my pleasure. I stumbled across something about 6 years, 7 years ago, where a guy explained in the occult how the seasons of mankind work. It comes from, all of this is a perversion or a warping of biblical stuff. And he described how there are 28 seasons in the life of the world over 6,000 years. And then there's a 1,000-year period that will be like a reset. And nobody knows the true characteristic of it. So our existence will last 7,000 years. It'll be the equivalent of a week. And he described how, if you go to the book of Ecclesiastes, it describes them. It begins with a time to live and then a time to die. Sorry, my chest is very, very, very tight. This is talking and thinking about this stuff is anguish for me, as I'm sure it will be for some of your viewers. So it talks about a time to live, a time to die, a time to build up, a time to tear down, etc., etc. 26 seasons, if you like. And you can think of them this way. Let's say it's a time to build up and you open a construction business. It's like getting a tan in the summertime. It's easy. The Lord creates an environment in which you shall flourish if you go with the flow of his environment. If you open a demolition business in the time of time to pull down, you're going to do well. Demolition businesses, well, everybody gets, there's no shortage of tans to be had on a nice beach in summertime. It's not like it's a zero-sum game. But the last two times are described as a time of war and a time of peace, excuse me. And the implication is that regardless of whether you're peaceful or warlike, you're going to be subjected to it. So if you didn't go into the demolition business in the time of tearing down, well, you wouldn't flourish very well, but you could continue. Whereas in the time of war, war is coming to you. You can't avoid it. You are, as it were, in the demolition business, whether you like it or not. And supposedly, the time of war began in 1812. And Napoleon, who was a well-known occultist, took advantage of that to invade Russia, because part of their belief system is that Russia is the last ark of Christianity, and they are behoven to destroy it. And it must be chopped up into five pieces, as Caius Cullis so very famously demonstrated with a picture, a big chart, saying Russia is too big and it must be carved up. And then those five pieces will be like the mines of South Africa after the Boer War, given to five chosen occultist families. I recently said to one of my brothers that you can't understand the Boer War unless you look at it through the lens of cui bono. It wrecked the British Empire, absolutely destroyed it. If you dig into the facts and figures, it was devastating. And it destroyed the Afrikaner.
Just on that, one of the interesting side effects of the Anglo-Boer War. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in. I don't want to break your flow. But history has been very kind to the Boers, even though they lost.
Yeah. But the Boer War, you know, the realistic figure of the number of women and children who were starved to death in the world's second concentration camps is 36,000, which as a percentage of the population is enormous. You know, the men in the field in the Boer War on the Boer side were somewhere between 40 and 60,000. And the number of British troops deployed was 400,000. So it was devastating to the Boer folk, and it was devastating to the blacks of South Africa. The only people who profited by it were the alien occultists who came in and took over the world's largest gold resource of all of the history of mankind. And similarly, there's this timeline for the end of the world. And we are in the time of war. If you divide 6,000 by 28 seasons from the book of Ecclesiastes, you get 214.28 years per season. And that means that in about 9 months' time, the time of war will end. And the occultists believe that they must extinguish mankind, or almost extinguish mankind, before the time of peace, which will be the 28th and last of these seasons, prior to the 1,000-year reset, whose nature nobody really knows, because the heavens will not allow you to prosecute war in that last time, which is the time of peace. So they're setting up a third world war. They call it the 12-minute war. And it must be engendered in Ukraine. There are reasons for that. We can go into them. And this has been known for thousands, literally thousands of years. It's the Ukraine thing is not a recent development. It's been understood that that is where the Third World War that leads to the destruction of the last arc of Christianity, namely Russia, must occur. And the 12-minute war, the period of time was calculated by a Satanist in Lithuania in the 1700s. The way to look at it is like a book, a novel. It might have a preface and a foreword, and they might be really nice to read, good reading. And then there's the introduction, the beginning, middle, and end, as we all know. You get the introduction to the story, the setting of the scene, and then you've got the middle, where all the action happens, and within the middle there's a climax. And then there's a denouement, where the strings are all brought together. So there's the dramatic moment. Sherlock Holmes figures out, you know, there's a confrontation in an alleyway. Sherlock Holmes wins. He gives an elucidation of what all transpired that Dr. Watson missed and Inspector Lestrade missed over the previous 3 weeks. That's the denouement. After the action where he brings everything together, and then there's usually an epilogue in which Dr. Watson says that Holmes went off to do beekeeping in Dorset and whatever else. So if we talk about a 12-minute war, it's not to say that there won't be it won't be surrounded on every side by a run-up and a fall-off and so on. They use the zodiac very much. So they use three calendars. The one is a lunisolar calendar, the one is the Christian calendar, and the one is the zodiac. So we'll allude freely to all three of them, and people shouldn't be bewildered or perplexed by that. They say that in the year of the snake, which is the wood snake, curiously, this is purely a curiosity for your sake, Jeremy, that means the boomslang. We have a snake in South Africa whose poison is almost unique in the world. Most snakes' venoms, I shouldn't say poison, venoms are similar in certain ways. They may work differently. Some attack tissues, some attack nerves, but the venoms are roughly similar. Whereas the boomslang, the green tree snake of South Africa, has quite a unique venom that's lethal. Anyway, that's merely a curiosity. But in the year of the tree snake, taken from the story of Jacob, again, a perverting, a warping of Christianity, or in this case, the Old Testament, the snake, the story of Jacob calling his sons together and saying, I shall tell you what shall happen in the end times. And he says, he turns to Dan and he says, Dan shall be a judge unto his brothers. He shall be as a snake, as a viper by the way, who strikes at the heel of the horse, causing the horse to rear and the rider to fall backward. And they would say that what that means is that the year of the snake shall, there shall be an event in the year of the snake that shall cause the year of the horse to rear backward or rear up, and the rider, mankind, riding this year, living in that year, shall fall backward and break its neck. So their goal is to break the neck of mankind next year, predicated on events that transpire in this year. This year in the zodiac ends on the 15th of February. So sometime from the 16th of February next year shall be the 12-minute war that breaks the neck of humanity. But given that we're dealing with three calendars that overlap, the critical period is up until September next year. So the year of the horse is not a roughly 12-month opportunity in zodiac years for them to do these things. It's about a 6.5-month opportunity. So they say that World War III must happen next year from the 16th of February. They must destroy the world in that period of time. And the onus is special because in their understanding of things, in the Christian understanding of things, in our understanding of life, the world and everything, religion, God, we are afforded the opportunity to be complacent. Now, many of your Christian listeners will by now be vociferously saying that's not true, and I understand fully, and I happen to agree. But our general understanding is that if we go along to get along, Jesus will love us just the same. They don't see it that way. They see it that they have to aggressively hasten the coming of their Messiah, so that he can rule from the third temple. Now we'll have, excuse me, I've got a little itch on my back. I beg your pardon. So that he can rule from the third temple. And their Messiah is the green tree snake of the Garden of Eden. And as one of the leading occultists, one of the leading teachers of occult said recently in what you might describe as a sermon, it turns out that the snake in the Garden of Eden, the Lucifer, the Satan, the devil, was the good guy all along. And he, within a very short span of time, must be brought to rule over the whole world from the third temple in Jerusalem. Now, I don't mean to conflate Judaism with the occult. As I've already said, they take this stuff from the Bible that you and I read. Does that make me an occultist? No. Does it make me want to destroy, to break the neck of humanity or of mankind next year? No. So people should not make false connections. But it will be noteworthy to your viewers that every single last element and item and piece of material and personage for the third temple is already prepared. And if you visit templeinstitute.org, you can see that. All of the vessels of silver and gold, all of the robes, all of the ornaments, all of the choirs, the priests, the Levites, the whole lot are already in position. And you can spend some time on that website listening to the choir rehearse, for example. And as luck would have it, in 1997, I was working as a fisherman on the Sea of Galilee. And we came in one afternoon and the ablution facilities were limited. The fish on the Sea of Galilee are particularly oleaginous. So after spending a day working with them, you're covered with a patina of the most awful slime and gunk. And the first thing you have to do is shower with a strong soap, get it out of your hair and off your skin. And my mate, my fishing mate, went in to the showers first, and I sat one side, and there was a newspaper lying on a bench. And while I waited to have my turn, I read the newspaper, and I've never forgotten this story of how the people who will physically build, you do the stones and the mortar and the woodwork and what have you of the third temple, were already housed in a compound somewhere, a secret location in Israel, a compound that had been built off the ground through a series of cantilevers and pulleys and what have you for religious reasons. So those boys, those young boys who were housed there, who've never been outdoors, who've only seen the light of day through windows, who've never set foot on earth, have been waiting for nearly 30 years to be the people who will build the third temple. They've been sequestered since 1997 or previous. So everything is in place, including the red heifers. There's a requirement that the builders of the third temple should be anointed by ashes sprinkled on them with hyssop branches, hyssop tree branches, ashes mixed with water of a heifer, that is to say a cow that's never been covered, that's been burned, you know, ashes. And in recent years, a man in Texas got it right to clone through in vitro fertilization and genetic altering five red heifers, the principal requirement being that they should not, they must be heifers, they may not have been covered, they may not be 3 years old, and they may not have three white hairs or two red hairs next to one another. And for the past 2,000 years, literally, the last red heifer's ashes were lost around the time of the destruction of the second temple in AD 70 by the Roman general Titus. Those heifer ashes have been lost. They're vital for various ceremonies, not just the anointing of the builders. And for 2,000 years, the Jews have been looking for a red heifer wherever they go. It's been this sort of secret exercise, unbeknownst to us, for 2,000 years. If one had been spotted 300 years ago by a Jew, they would have pulled out all the stops in France, Germany, Britain, wherever, to ensure that they got their hands on that red heifer. Anyway, they couldn't find one for 2,000 years, and this Texan farmer managed to get it right, bred five. Two of them were deemed unsuitable. Three of them were shipped to Israel, and one of them was recently burned. So everything is in place for the third temple. Some of the requirements, and it's very abstruse. I could go into detail, but we'd be here for 16 hours. This is the product of at least 2,000 hours of research since I first stumbled across this chappie talking about these seasons of mankind. One of the requirements is the extirpation of Gaza and the expansion of Israel's northern border to the Litani River, which it hasn't gotten right, but it has practically gotten right, the extirpation of Gaza. And there are a couple of other things too. Expansion to the Euphrates and expansion to the Nile. But those things are not non-negotiable necessities. Because in the Bible, there are various descriptions of the geography of the land of Israel. The maximalist one sees Israel's western / southern border as the Nile, and eastern border as the Euphrates, and northern border as the Litani River. But other descriptions, which are deemed to be the utter word of, depending upon who you call God, whether it's the devil is God, Lucifer is God, Lucifer is the Messiah, or you have a different perception, it doesn't matter, permit Israel to be much smaller. And as a matter of interest to you, you'll recall, well, let me say this. In the story of Balaam and Balak, at the end, the sorcerer says, I can't curse Israel, but what I can do is give you an insight into the end times. And so he makes this sort of prophecy, if you like, that has bewildered people for 2,000 years, of 3,000 years. Obviously, those scriptures existed before Christianity did. In which he says, there shall arise out of Jacob a star. And he proceeds with a little description. And using Babylonian black magic, you know, the satanic magic that permits the rape of a three-year-old Christian girl, as they would say, as they do say, in writing, such a man has done nothing. Using that black magic, they calculated, as did the man in Lithuania, the 12-minute war, they calculated that all of these events would transpire in the year following a star that arrives on a Friday that is also the 25th day of the month of one of their months in the occult calendar, and it remains for 70 days. And 2 years ago, a Chinese observatory spotted an object in space, couldn't identify it, and perhaps one way of describing it is, imagine that you and I were driving on this farm, you finally man up and take responsibility for the promises that you make your friends, and you come hunting springbok here. I, being far more familiar with the with the farm than you, you might say, gee, I just saw something. And I say, what, Jeremy? And he says, oh, I don't know. I say, well, what sort of color? Oh, it was so rapid. I was moving in what direction? He says, oh, heavens above, Simon. And a minute later, I see that it's a kudu cow. And I say, about 250 kilograms, old cow going down to the river to drink. You know, it's just that I'm familiar with the bush. I'm familiar with the animals. I'm familiar with things that I've seen 100 times before. And as much as it's bewildering to spot such an animal in the foliage, I can do it a little bit better than you. This Chinese observatory announced to the world that it had seen an unknown object in space, and it was then picked up by a South African observatory, and they announced that it was a hitherto unknown comet that would arrive on the 27th of September last year, 2024. It would be present for 7 days, and then it would effervesce, if that's the right word, it would and be no more. In the occult, they said, heaven, we've been waiting for 3,000 years. Oh, the time of the green tree snake is here at long last. And they went on to say, when it effervesces, I don't know what is the right word in astronomical terms for a star that fritters out, the Damascus will fall. And then the next step is to destroy the last arc of Christianity, which is Moscow, and three great buildings in Moscow will fall. And then the green tree snake Messiah will come from the gates of Moscow. And they must make that happen. Lo and behold, on the 5th of December, the 70th day of that comet, which was visible to the naked eye in the southern hemisphere, there's some great photographs of it. It really was tremendous. Damascus fell. And to many of us, it was perplexing because the Syrian army had put up such a stiff resistance against ISIS, Al-Qaeda, all the various forces that were involved. There were about seven belligerents in that conflict over nearly a decade and a half. They just laid down their arms on one given day. Boom, over, the whole conflict. Now, the invading forces were ISIS, al-Jolani, who's now the president, and 4 weeks ago was having tea and crumpets with Donald Trump in the White House, in spite of the fact that we were told by Tony Blair and every prime minister since and every president since George W. Bush that the war on terror was the war against Al-Qaeda and ISIS. The head of ISIS, al-Jolani, was nibbling on crumpets in the Oval Office with Donald Trump a few weeks ago. So it turns out that all along they were secret allies. It was ISIS, the U.S. Military, the Turks, and the Israelis. And the Syrians just melted before them. And now they've installed this new government, but supposedly the mortal enemies of the West. But a portion of the territory occupied by Israel wasn't relinquished. Who knows what dog Israel had in this fight, but supposedly they were supposed to, well, not supposedly, they did. They were part of the four invading armies. The portion that they've kept is Mount Hermon. The reason being that in the occult, it is understood that Mount Hermon is the site of the landing of the angels that copulated with the daughters of mankind in that story in Genesis that produced the giants, the Nephilim, that had to then be wiped out by the flood. It's a portal. Mount Hermon is a portal to the heavens. You needn't believe it. I needn't believe it. But in the occult, they believed that it was absolutely imperative that for the devil to rule over the world from the third temple, they had to facilitate the coming of spirits that need to use Mount Hermon as a thoroughfare or a portal, a door, a doorway. So that is the long and the short of what I wanted to tell you. There's a lot more to it. We could branch off in all sorts of directions. I'll shut up very shortly. But to illustrate the point of how much more there is to discuss, at the risk of going down rabbit holes, because I don't know for certain that this is going to transpire, but they are adamant that the site of the generation, if you like, of the Third World War that breaks the neck of humanity, the site of the generation, the creation of it, that leads to the destruction of Moscow, is Ukraine, as I've already mentioned. Now, the thing I wanted to add, the little branch to the stem of the story, is, for instance, I don't know that this is going to be a certainty, but it's a very intriguing thing to contemplate. After the Budapest Accords of 1994, addressing how the Soviet Union's strategic arsenal will be managed following the breakup of the Soviet Union on the 25th of December 1991. So in other words, at that time, the whole world was waiting with bated breath to figure out, just to find out, you know, the Soviet Union broke up. A whole bunch of its weapons are in Moldova, a whole bunch in Belarusia, a whole bunch in Ukraine. What's going to become of these things? Are we going to witness the creation of three new nuclear powers just by virtue of the fact that possession is 9/10 of the law? Budapest Accords come along, and the USA brokers a deal whereby Russia, as the mothership of the Soviet Union, takes everything back. Shake hands, well and good. They send teams down to Ukraine to retrieve, if I remember correctly, 86 nuclear weapons. They get there and 54 are missing. So I'm not saying that those 54 nuclear weapons are going to be used to start the Third World War, the 12-minute war. I'm just saying that I'm now going to be quiet after a long monologue, a long soliloquy, except that I'm throwing into the mix that if people are intrigued by this, that is by no means the end of the story, this encapsulation that I've given. In fact, it is, as I said earlier, a 16-hour long intrigue. I've just reduced it or distilled it down to something that is digestible to somebody who's listening to an hour-long podcast. In the occult, so in the world of Satan worshippers, it is believed that the calendars and the seasons of heaven permit them only one opportunity to destroy mankind. It is an interval or a window created by three overlapping calendars: the zodiac calendar, the Christian calendar, and a lunisolar calendar that they use. That window for the destruction of all of mankind is, roughly speaking, from the 16th of February next year to September of next year. And that those events that destroy all of mankind, that break the neck of mankind, must be instigated in this year. And in instigating those events this year, so this year something happens, I offend you this year, Jeremy, and next year you get the opportunity to smack me in the face in retaliation. That's how it's got to happen. And that shall precipitate the coming of the Satan to rule over the world from the third temple in Jerusalem. And as I said, I'm not conflating Judaism and Satan worship. I'm just saying that all of this stuff is derived from Christianity or Judaism. All of it, all of the satanic stuff is purely a warping of what we believe. Therefore, don't mistake me when I say it's noteworthy that the Jews have already prepared all of the elements for the building of the third temple. That's not to say that the Jews and the Satan worshippers are one and the same. It is purely noteworthy that the Satan worshippers say, next year we must build the third temple for the devil, the green tree snake, to rule over the world. And as it happens, I make note of the fact that all, bar none, all of the elements required for the building of the third temple, including the builders and the stones and the garments and the vessels and the choir and so on and so forth, are already completed. The only thing that's not yet done is the building. Every other thing is already completed. That's it. I hope that pricey is clear for
people. It's interesting. So you say you're not suggesting that the Satanists or the occultists and the Jews are the same thing. Yet if you go online for even 10 seconds, you will, in just about every forum or social media outlet, see something about the synagogue of Satan and the reference to the Jews.
Yeah, I think that the words of our Lord and Savior are unequivocal. I'm just saying that I am not giving myself the liberty of making associations and drawing conclusions. I'm sitting here, as the youngsters say nowadays, spitting facts. Every single word that I've said is verifiable by multifarious sources. If one of your listeners took great offense and said, well, I'm going to fly out from London or wherever and I'm going to take on that blasted Simon, I believe he lives in an enormous farmhouse, go down there for 3 weeks, prove him wrong, he'll put me up like a lord, we'll eat fatty mutton from morning to night, have great conversation, that person will fly back home persuaded not that I'm right or even that the people who say these things are right, but that the original sources do indeed say these things. All of the original sources say what I'm telling you. I have drawn no conclusions. All of the original sources point in the same direction. They all say that the devil at the end of the day is the savior of mankind. And our God says to us that the Pharisees are the synagogue of Satan, that the returned Pharisees from Babylon were saturated by Babylonian black magic to the extent that they bragged about it in various literature, going so far as to call it the Babylonian Talmud. Not Jeremy's Talmud or the Israel Talmud or the Jewish Talmud. The Babylonian Talmud. They put it in your face. This is all a contrivance of Babylonian black magic. That part is unequivocal. But far be it from me to say this one is that and that one is the other and the next one is the following. Christ Almighty has already done that for us.
But let's say you're not a Christian or you're not a Jew. I mean, a large number of my audience will just write off what you're saying as religious nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. That's like me, Jeremy. I'm equally stupid to them. I'm not haughty about these things. I've made that stupid mistake myself. Some months ago when I was annoyed by my Belgian Malinois. As you know, I have a terrifying Malinois who has bitten many, many people. Fortunately, she always gets it right to bite miscreants, so there's seldom any consequences because everybody backs me up or backs her up. But I was furious with her one morning at 3 o'clock when she wanted to go out. And I thought, bugger you, you can hold it in. She was really, she'd misbehaved the night before. But my opinion meant nothing to her bowels. So she promptly trotted up the stairs to the other wing of the house where I'm sitting now and came into this very office which has AstroTurf as a carpet. It works quite well. It sounds ridiculous, but it's lovely. It works very well. And AstroTurf resembling grass, she evacuated her bowels here. And being a monster of a dog, it was a monster of an evacuation. It doesn't matter whether you or I believe what they believe. All that matters is that they believe it and they act according to it. I grew up in the province of Natal in South Africa, where there is the largest population of Indians outside of India. And I could object all I like to them, celebrating the feast of Diwali. It would change nothing. People write this stuff off stupidly. It's stupid to do it. It's stupid to say, because I don't believe it, therefore it doesn't count. All it has to do is count for the person who believes that they're so hungry they should kill for money, or they're so angry they should perpetrate rape, or whatever the thing may be. If I went around sanctimoniously admonishing people with my finger like this not to commit crime, do you think it would make any difference? Of course not. These people are going to bring hell to earth next year, whether we like it or not. Next year is the year that the most powerful forces of the world are going to endeavor to break the neck of humanity through a climactic 12-minute war. And there's nothing that we can do about it. Only our God can intervene. And he said that he would. But how much suffering there will be between then and now, I don't know, Jeremy.
Is this war physical, or could it be digital or cyber or psychological?
I think that it will be physical. I think that it will be nuclear in order for it to be 12 minutes long. But I have read and heard them speaking expansively of AI playing a role in it. What role, I don't know. They don't say. But they do go so far as to speculate how one might counter that. So in other words, if I am an occultist and I'm very pleased that AI is killing everybody around me, but I'm threatened by AI, what steps might I take to counter that? But it's purely speculative. This is just conversations that they're holding, Jeremy.
You mentioned to me the other day about the accuracy of Martin Armstrong. Now, I have had him on my show, and in fact, his earlier work is what got him into trouble with the authorities, because he was so accurate.
Oh, Martin Armstrong is presently announcing, he's had these tweets in recent days, and some interviews too, that there's something, I don't want to use a word that might be construed by people as blasphemous, but there's something almighty coming to the earth, that the world is about to be smacked silly in the chops. Not to conflate two disparate things, but let me illustrate this way. I think that they're creating a confluence of events and circumstances which together will annihilate the world. And people are going to think now that, you know, we've gone from the sublime to the ridiculous. But anybody who is closely following the events in the silver market will apprehend that it does not bode well for mankind. People who are not following closely might say, oh, rubbish, man. The silver price going from 25 to 64 is not the end of the world. But those who are following very closely might come up for me, as we say in South Africa, and say, well, I'm not saying that Simon is right, but he may have a point, because the 145 million ounces shortage can't be fixed. So about at least 10% at the very minimum 10%, but there's an expert who was recently on Maneco 64, an Italian guy in Singapore, who makes the most cogent argument. He makes a much more cogent argument than anybody else. I don't say that that makes him right. I say that you could listen to 100 discussions on this matter, and you would have to objectively concede the fact that he makes, in terms of data, statistics, numbers, and information, facts and figures, the most cogent argument that a third of all of next year's cell phones, computers, electric vehicles, solar panels, programmable logic controllers, and so on and so forth, cannot be produced. Because there is no way. Silver is not something that you can, whose production you can increase. It's simply impossible for various technical reasons. And so I'm just throwing it out there like I threw out the 54, whatever it is, missing nuclear bombs. That there are events transpiring in the world today which are of far greater import than most people will apprehend. One way or the other, at least 10% of the planned production of technical goods of the year 2026 cannot happen. There's no way that it can happen. But nobody's talking about it, as nobody's talking about the shutdown of the COMEX, except people like you and me and, you know, a handful of others. The COMEX is a tier one military institution, or whatever you want to call it. That means it's in the same category as the White House and a nuclear silo, a nuclear missile silo. So to shut it down on Thanksgiving Friday required the participation of the President of the United States of America. It's now transpired that the reason it was shut down, we learned this only yesterday, was because J.P. Morgan had a short position on 900 million ounces of silver. Basically, all of global mining, more than about 800 million ounces of silver is mined in a year. I know this because I held an hour and 31 minutes and 21 second conversation with the man who is in all probability the greatest living geologist. His pedigree is, you know, you meet such a human being once in your life. He's like what Tiger Woods was to golf some years ago. There was no dispute who was the best, based purely on pedigree. And he gave me a lot of this information. By rare coincidence, I happen to know him. And he happens to have had some dealings with my sons. So I rang him up. And he and I have been talking about this because it's been coming for some time. So the world mines 800 million ounces a year. Through recovery, we get about 1 billion ounces of production a year. And that can't be changed. There's nothing you can do to change it. The demand for next year is somewhere between 1,145,000,000, that's the base minimum, and 1,300,000,000 ounces of silver. And so they shut down the COMEX because J.P. Morgan had a short position over 900 million ounces. And with silver going through 58, it would have bankrupted them and through knock-ons, most of the banks of the world. And we would have all, the world would have been extinguished in one fell swoop. And that was over. That was precipitated by a trade of 38 million ounces, which was stood for delivery, which never happens. But a Bahraini syndicate said, you know, please excuse my language, but stuff, you promised we could take it. That's what we're going to do. So they apparently took delivery of 38 million ounces in spite of a $65 million offer from the COMEX to say, we'll pay you out and we'll give you $65 million extra. But once that trade was proceeded with, and J.P. Morgan and banks all around the world were about to get wiped out, the president authorized the COMEX to be shut down for 10 hours on a false premise of air conditioning problems. And that continued over the Thanksgiving weekend. So there was 3 days in which the entire global trade in silver had no true north, which is the COMEX. But there wasn't some enormous diplomatic scandal, because the Americans phoned our president, the prime minister of the UK, phoned the whole world and said, look, if you want, in our case in South Africa, Absa, Nedbank, First National and Standard Bank to continue to exist, you've got to let us do this. And you just tell your people on your stock exchange who are crying about not being able to, you know, not having a reference point, a true north, being the COMEX, tell them just to mind their own business. However, equally slyly, that was over 7,300 trades, contracts, amounting to 38 million ounces. There's a series of contracts that will terminate on Christmas Day. 10,000 contracts for 50 million ounces of silver that are being stood for delivery. The delivery is the 31st of December, the delivery date. I'm not saying that this is the end of the world as we know it, and these are the events that are going to break the neck of humankind. I am saying that when I was chatting to this guy who is arguably the world's top geologist, at some point in the conversation, he's a very reticent guy. He's extremely professional. But I was lobbing facts at him. And given that we know each other, he eventually said, all right then. I'm taking off my official cap. We can hold a candid conversation and I'll tell you what I really think. And he said, do you know, Simon, that this is going to change how we live? I said, yes, I know. He said, no, do you understand that if those 50 million are taken out of the system on top of the 38, on top of the 145 million that's already short for next year, which can't be circumvented, there's no way to do it, and it leads to a silver run and we're paying $400 an ounce for silver next year, and the banks have to wind up all of their short positions, and Deutsche Bank's unrealized losses in the USA alone are presently $27 trillion through dumb trades. You know, people who get we would say in South African English, 8 A's in matric, meaning in your last year of school, you take 2 extra subjects that you don't have to take, and you get a first-class pass in all 8 subjects. Because that's, you know, but then they would take the COVID vaccine. So it's these highly intellectual people, incredibly intellectual people who are rudimentarily stupid, because they can study physics and geography and history very well. But if you say to them in 2020, just to take a random year, everybody's dropping dead around you. It's just that you and your family and your inner circle and your inner circle's outer circle and everybody you know are refusing to see it. They'll fall for that. So they are at the deepest element, very, very stupid human beings. And you have those sorts of people who've been placing all of these bets through the banking system for decades and decades and decades, such that, as I've just said to you, Deutsche Bank's American operation alone has $27 trillion worth of rolled over unrealized losses. So this is what this guy was saying to me. He was saying, you know, this is the natural consequence. Simon, you better hope that this doesn't happen, or none of us will eat food next year. That's the summation of my story. I'm sorry I banged on for so long, Jeremy.
Is it a bad idea to play on the turf of predictions, because what will happen is if nothing happens, you're going to end up with fingers being pointed at you and people laughing.
I think it's a very bad idea, and I never engage in it. I don't do forecasting and predictions and that sort of thing. All I'm doing is reporting on, heaven forfend this, but I live alone in a lonely farmstead in the country that has the highest rate of death by profession in the world. The rate of death of white commercial farmers in South Africa, as a German journalist insisted to me recently, she adamantly insisted that my figures were wrong and that her figures were right, is 228 per 100,000 per year. You know, the statistical. And if you go on the internet, the supposedly the most fatal profession is logging in Canada, which is 99 per 100,000 per year. Nobody wants to admit that, in fact, as a white South African farmer, the chances of you being of you dying are far greater, more than double greater than what is supposedly the most dangerous profession. Now, imagine I put all of my faith in my creator, but somebody in the local township approached me and said, sir, I heard that they're going to try and kill you at 3 o'clock on Friday morning. Now you tell me. Obviously, I'm going to take that seriously if it's a credible source and this and that and the next thing. I'm not predicting anything. I'm not saying I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do this and I'm telling you that by next Tuesday, yeah, man. I'm saying, hey, guys, you may be fascinated to know that they are saying that they're coming to your farmhouse next Friday morning at 3 o'clock. They are saying that it is incumbent upon them to destroy mankind in the year 2026, beginning the 16th of February, window to September. And I think that that is worth me telling to you, just as if the roles were reversed. And you came to me and you said, hey, Simon, yes, see, you won't believe what I just heard. I was dropping off somebody, picking up somebody, and somebody said to me that your life is in mortal danger. I would say, thanks, Jeremy. Jeez, you're the best man. And that's what people should be doing. They should be thanking me, not because I'm right. I'm not saying anything. I'm regurgitating something that somebody else is saying. And people should be saying, heavens above, Simon, even if not you, because you can substantiate every single word. Nothing of what you're saying is speculative, or almost nothing. I did speculate on the possible correlation between these silver events and the year of the green tree snake, and I did speculate on the possibility of a correlation or some connection of the missing nuclear bombs and the year of the green tree snake. But by and large, I'm not speculating. I'm merely regurgitating for the edification of those people who wish to be best prepared for the worst events, what the driving occult forces of the world are insisting is going to take place next year. That's all there is to it. And I don't see how, I don't want to say I don't see how they can be wrong. I am saying that if you look at what's cooking in Europe and the USA and Venezuela and Ukraine, I'll give you one example. When I was in Donbass, I was told by the top representative in Donbass, the top person. I don't want to misquote her, and I wrote down We had a 2.5 hour meeting. Her aides said it was the first time ever, ever in her career that she held a 2.5 hour meeting. She doesn't do meetings beyond 20 minutes, but I wrote down everything she said in those 2.5 hours, and I believe that I'm not far from the truth when I say that she said that almost every single day NATO attacks the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Now, if that's not endeavoring rigorously to instigate a nuclear war, then I don't know what is, because I'm 54 years old and I've spent 54 of the past 54 years listening to liberals tell me about how nuclear power is bad and it should be banned and it's really not good and campaign for nuclear disarmament. You know, all of this I've listened to. Now the forces, the military forces that represent the progressive West are attacking a nuclear power plant every single day for nigh on 4 years. If you can reconcile that for me intellectually, I've got a bridge to sell you. It's idiotic what we're required to believe by the world around us. Idiotic. No, you're exaggerating and you're putting too much emphasis on and you're inclined to talk things up. A person very close to me the other day said to me, you talk things up. And I disputed. I said, I do a blooming good job of talking things up when I know that they're certain. I have a way of conveying it, carrying it across. But tell me about the time that I was wrong. When you were all celebrating our new president, all of you, there was nobody, no conservative was unhappy about our new president. I was the one and only one. And I've turned out to be right. And the crisis with our economy and the crisis with Eskom, our national electricity supplier, just when it looked like it was going to be saved and everything would be delightful. I said, all of the evidence points contrary-wise. And if I'm talking this up, I don't think it's because I'm wrong. You have to decide, is it that nuclear power plants are inherently dangerous and we should treat them with kid gloves and even better, we should not have nuclear power plants? Or is it okay to attack them for 1,200 days in succession or almost 1,200 times in succession? Make up your mind. I'm saying that if I look at what's happening in the world today, the Venezuela thing, the drug routes are all, according, you can go now and look on the United Nations website. They've got, you know, all of their different departments, drug trade in the world. The South America to North America drug trade is all on the left-hand side, is all west of the Central American salient, west from South America to the west coast of North America. But we're supposed to believe that little skiffs into whose the bottom of whose hull we can see from those drones. In other words, just as they're saying it was carrying an enormous amount of drugs, we can see that they are nil. We can see it's conspicuous that they're carrying no drugs. That have outboard motors with a couple of fuel tanks that couldn't possibly reach the USA, are carrying such a volume of drugs that they should be wiped out without judicial process. And 15,000 men, a Marine Expeditionary Party of 10,000 Marines plus sailors and airmen and what have you, should be stationed off the coast of Venezuela. Make up your mind. I don't mind if there's a COVID. In fact, I think the more COVID, the better. You can have it your way, but you can't have it both ways. You can't say there's a COVID and everybody's dying when neither you nor I know of anybody who's died, much less know of many, many, many people, so many people who are dying that it warrants the shutting down of the world. So if you think I'm a florid speaker, flamboyant and charismatic, and he gets all carried away, and he sucks people into his web, and it ends there. He doesn't tell the truth. Then, well, you can discuss it. I don't mind. I'll bring out all of the books that talk about destroying all of mankind next year. I'll produce the videos and the writings and the what have you. We can spend a couple of hours. I've got two big screens here, one in my office, one in my living area, and some other screens too. We can bring up all of the COVID statistics, the American Insurance Association statistics, Edward Dowd's brilliant statistics as Edward Dowd, as arguably the world's greatest living statistician. We'll see who's charismatic and prone to exaggeration and who's not. I put it to you that you are not just prone to exaggeration. You're a rank liar of the first water when you say that there's a COVID. You are far more inclined to talking things up than I am. When you say that the banking sector is healthy, I say again that you are a rank liar of the first water. When you say that the Comex was shut down because of an air conditioning problem, I say the bullshitter in the room is not me, it's you. There are dark things happening, Jeremy. Very, very, very dark things. And the media is not talking about them in any way that might be described as honest or pursuant the truth. There's no pursuit in mainstream media. One of my brothers said to me yesterday, but he said, while we were talking, he was looking at various websites. And he said to me, but explain to me, Simon, because I don't understand. How is it that BBC, CNN, Fox News, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are not talking about this? Because they're the florid ones, the flamboyant ones, the charismatic ones. They are the ones who talk things up. But in the opposite, they're either talking them down or they're telling you, don't worry, it's sunshine and roses.
Simon, why is it always the Jews?
Synagogue of Satan. Synagogue of Satan. Why is it always the Christians that are self-deprecatory and forever doing mea culpa and providing? Here's Christianity in a nutshell, Jerry. For the past 50 years, Christians have taken the following proposition seriously. You should not have too many children because the world is overpopulated, and you should donate tremendous sums of money to neonatal clinics in Africa. You could call it the single most stupid cohort in the history of mankind. And I'd be sympathetic to that assertion. Or you could say it's because the religion conditions you. White, Western European, conservative Christians have stopped breeding while going to church and giving money so that people can breed in Asia, the Near East, and Africa, and South America. The birth rates and the childhood, the infant mortality rates show clear. It's so clear. It's the more money that the West gives in the spirit of guilt for the purposes of this is beauty. You know, you see it all across the USA. Drive down the motorway, the biggest billboard you've ever seen in your life, 10 times bigger than the biggest billboard you will see in Europe, is a mediocre average billboard on I-90. This is Beauty. Beauty is only 4 years old. Beauty has a beautiful smile, but that beautiful smile hides tremendous pain because Beauty was born with a cleft palate, and there's no cleft palate. Cleft palate surgeons in America. But if you give $100, that has been the underpinning narrative of everything for the past 50 years. The underpinning narrative of education, the underpinning narrative of gender relations. One of my sons asked me a piece of advice the other day. He's doing very well. He's got an opportunity. How should he handle it? And I said to him, what's key to this opportunity is you're going into an environment of women. It's totally dominated by women. Why do they want you? And he was silent. I said, because of your personality. You are just the guy that they need. You are perfect for a bunch of women because you take responsibility. You're that guy. You're the guy who will fix the problems, smack people in the face, kick people out of the way, elbow people, headbutt them to make things happen. This can all be summed up in Megan Rapinoe saying, I deserve this. I'm a woman. I'm proud. I just won the World Cup. In men's soccer, the players get about 10% of the sponsorship. In women's soccer, we get 40-odd percent because it's really special. And now I'm going to play the Wrexham under-15 boys team in England and humiliate them. And the Wrexham, I think it was Wrexham, under-15 team beat the American Women's World Cup soccer team 15-0 or 13-1 or something. A week later, the same women's soccer team played the another team's retirees, all retirees, all guys that, you know, in their 40s and 50s, and lost 15-1. The best women in the world. I'm not saying I hate women. I love women. I'm crazy about women. I'm besotted by women. Doesn't make them good athletes. Not at all, baby. But for 50 years, we've had to listen to the story that nuclear power is bad, except when we bomb the Zaporozhye power station 1,200 times, that people in Africa deserve the right to procreate at my expense, but I don't, that education should be skewed towards women out of sympathy, even though there's no difference between women and men, but it should be more feminine. Every single word that we've been told for 50 years. I said to one of my brothers yesterday, think about it. By the time that it was known that sugar was the leading cause of death in the world, by the time that it was known with absolute certainty that cancer feeds off sugar, that is its nutrition, by the time that it was known that diabetes and hypertension and common carotid disease were primarily caused by sugar. At that point in time, Coca-Cola adopted the slogan, Coke is life. At the time that it became known to mankind that the primary vector of all vectors of death, namely Coca-Cola, because it's the primary vector of sugar, which is the primary cause of the primary diseases of the West. At the time that it was known that Coca-Cola was the single most lethal, in effect, but by virtue of volume, killer of people in the West, they said, you know what? You know what we'll do? We'll tell them the opposite. We'll tell them it's health, life, vigor, vibrancy. Coke adds life. That is the story of primarily, but not only, the West of the past 50, arguably further, years. It is the story of a highly select group of people obeying the injunctions of their faith. in a way, in a manner that is no different than Western Christians obeying the injunctions of their faith, which we are told is to be meek, is to be sorry, is to acknowledge that we are first and foremost ever so bad. They exploit our greatest weakness. And that is how they lead us into an assisted suicide. It is fundamentally a paedophiliac. A man who's raped a three-year-old Christian girl has done nothing. In writing, paedophiliac, satanic, the green tree snake of the Garden of Eden, death cult, cabal, or if you prefer, assisted suicide cult, cabal.
Is there a solution? Is there a way to push back?
It's too late, Jeremy. It's too late. Jeremy, remind me the name of the Canadian, and he has a French name. He presents in English. You'll know him. Canadian scholar who was a big hit in podcasting about 7 years ago, 9, 8, 7, 65 years ago. He did quite a bit of work with the Canadian philosopher, the chap who's all over the show now, who had a nervous breakdown recently. So I'm not talking about the philosopher. I'm talking about the other academic, big podcaster for a time.
I can't remember.
Anyway, he interviewed me, I think, 3 times. And at the end of the last interview, you could see I broke his mood. And he's never spoken to me since. I've traded some messages via open forums where I've said, for example, on YouTube, congratulations on this video. I think it's an important piece of work. Keep it up. And he'll then, you know, send me a smiley face or thanks or whatever. But I broke our friendship. And we had a fantastic relationship for a couple of years. We got along like a house on fire. When he said to me, what can be done to save Canada? And I said to him, there's nothing that can be done. It's too late. And I'm telling you, Jeremy, that it's too late. The marches of, was it the 6th? 6th of December? Or 5th, I forget, in Birmingham, where the British people, you know, bashed in the shops. How many? 222 people arrested. The riot to save Britain. You know, it's nice to see. It's cute. It's very cute. It's as quaint as a 5-year-old girl with blonde hair and blue eyes in a summer cotton dress running through a field of corn. There's no limit to the cuteness, but it has no meaning. It doesn't make, you know, a cute girl that she's going to grow up to be a good mother. There's no necessary correlation. She's just cute and it ends there. Time will tell whether she's a good, decent woman and a good mother and a good wife. There's rioting now will change nothing. Jeremy, man, you know what was the original logo of the Fenians? It was a wolf in sheep's clothing. And the Labour Party, the Fenian society is not an outgrowth of the Labour Party. The Labour Party was set up by the Fenians. The Fenians founded the Labour Party. You can riot through the streets of Birmingham all you like. Keir Starmer is giving you 2 big birds. He is destroying Christianity and he's loving it and there's nothing you can do about it. He is a Fenian. The only reason they changed and they changed it so cynically, the Fenian Society changed its logo from a wolf in sheep's clothing to a tortoise, is because they thought it may be a bit too blatant. So they chose something equally blatant. But people are too, you know. Slowly but surely, we'll get there. And when we do, one snap of the beak, and we'll destroy it all. And that's what they're doing. The Fenian Society is destroying Great Britain as it swore to do 150 years ago. And which is not to say that the Conservative Party is any better. It's like that woman, Jewish woman, Satanist communist. I want to say Leah Kolb, who said in the 1930s, well, no, she said it maybe in the 1950s, but her words were, in the 1930s, we inserted 1,100 Talmudo-communists into the church for the purpose of destroying the church. This has been a long-term project. It has been everywhere, and it has been extremely successful. That is the only explanation for what has happened throughout the Western Christian world. And Marx said so. The number of examples of Marx saying, in the fourth critique of Hegel, he says, and I'll quote near verbatim, when will communists get it into their heads that the first purpose of communism is the destruction of the church? He then proceeded to explain how it works in the spiritual realm, how the Christian family, the nuclear family, is a reflection of the triune Godhead. This is according to him, not to me. And that if you can destroy the nuclear family through the woman, you can destroy the church entirely. He wasn't anti-Buddhism. He wasn't anti-Satanism. He was pro all of those things. All he was, he was never an atheist. And you can read it in his poetry. He writes extensively about his love for Lucifer, his love for the dark powers, his love for... I'm trying to think of another word that he uses abundantly that represents God. He was never an atheist. But the whole world believed he was an atheist, that he was against religion. No, he was pro-religion. His religion. He was anti-Christianity. So he says, how the red man, so pale-skinned people, how their men work are, is they're extremely intelligent and capable, and you can see it in the world that they develop, what they bring. But the vulnerability is in sins of the flesh and through their women. If you can make a European man's wife dissatisfied, you've got him. Because of all of the men of the world, he won't, if I may say this without great censure, he won't punch her in the face or give her 40 lashes, as is permitted by customary law in South Africa and as is permitted superabundantly in Sharia law of Islam. The European man, the pale man, the man who develops, whose brain is magnificent, is susceptible to sins of the flesh, and he's vulnerable to his woman. If you want to get to him, if you want to break his family, talk to his woman. Tell his woman what's going on, what he should be tolerant of, what he should permit, what he should allow, what's wrong, what's dissatisfying her. They say, so much so, this is the Satan worshippers, they say that there's like a secret tale of the burial of Jacob. Jacob dies, and he gets taken to the cave of the patriarchs to be laid with Isaac and Abraham and the wives, but not Rachel. Rachel died by the wayside, as you'll remember. Jacob's sons and his grandsons attend the interring. And as they get to the cave of the patriarchs, along comes Esau. Esau being the father of the Edomites, they would say. I don't want to get into this who is Israel thing. They would say the Edomites. Now, the word Adam, the word Edom, and the word that is used for red shield, in other words, the equivalent of the Red Cross in the Arab world is the Red Crescent. The equivalent of the Red Cross in Israel is the Red Shield of David. That word, Adam, and Adam and Edom are one and the same word. There is no difference implied by inflection or spelling or what have you. It's just a word that is spelled colloquially in three different ways, depending upon whether it's modern written Hebrew, modern spoken Hebrew, ancient written Hebrew, ancient spoken Hebrew. It's one and the same word. So Esau, the pale man, gets to the cave and rumor spreads. Esau's arrived. Jacob's sons naturally hate him, and the grandsons have been invested, as it were, with the same hatred. And one of Dan's sons, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, of Israel, is blind, and he chops off Esau's head. So he just swings wildly with his sword. So incensed with rage at the presence of this man that he's heard about, who is the rival to the heirs of Jacob, cuts his head off. And God allowed, or the heavenlies, this devil character, I don't know, the green tree snake, allowed the head to roll into the cave of the patriarchs and the body to fall outside. So the head of Edom is buried separately to his body, his brain, his wisdom, his knowledge, his understanding, his brightness, his enthusiasm, his eagerness, his go-get-him attitude, his build and create and pioneer and travel the world and improve, lift the world up by its own bootlaces. Even those people who are not you, you lift them up. Even those people who are your rivals, you build their hospitals. Even those people who are your rivals, you share technology with them. You give them all of the money and all of the knowledge and all of the capability in the world. You improve them. You improve the world. As the driving force of civilization, unrelentingly, with no successful rival, for 4,000 years, from the time that the Greeks became the primary civilization in the world, not in terms of size, but in terms of success and development, until the early 2000s, that group of people will drive the world in everything, they would say. They wouldn't admit it, is the way that I'm putting it, of course. But actually, Western European or European Christian Caucasians, they would say, as much as they're magnificent, they're very sinful people, and it's our job to kill them off forever. Which is why when the green tree snake rules, there's a 2-hour, 37-minute sermon on this by a guy called Daniel Gladstein. That is why when the green tree snake rules over the world from the third temple, white people will be forbidden from connubial relations with other white people. So the race must, so the few white people that survive the destruction of Europe, which we're witnessing now, those whites were not allowed to breed white children as a law from the third temple. And of course, people scoff at that. They scoff. They do. They scoff. But they're the same idiots who believe the COVID narrative in 2020. They can sell you anything. There is nothing that you will not believe.
Well, Simon Rosh, on that uplifting note, how can my audience follow you?
Jeremy Saitlanders is a civil defense organization in South Africa preparing to safeguard the welfare of our people in the event of a civil war. We are completely peaceful. We've never had charges brought against us. We don't do illegal things. We don't, you know, stock up on guns and what have you. We're a Christian, God-fearing, conservative organization. And they are welcome to, if they wish, to support us, to make donations through the facilities that are easily found at saitlanders.org. You can see the spelling behind me, saitlanders.org. You go there, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and you'll be shown various ways that you can make a donation. Thank you very much in anticipation.
As always, my friend, Simon Roche, thank you for joining me in the trenches.